For the past 20 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been dedicated to giving you the best content. From a diverse mixture of music and spoken word programs to art reviews and current news affairs. What started out as a music club is now a campus community radio station. So in this spirit, we would like to show our gratitude to all those who have been a source of inspiration and positivity which has made these 20 years colorful, fun, and full of success. CJSF. Diverse. Independent. Yours.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded January 10th, 2024. While approaching 100 days of Israel's bombing of civilians in Gaza and its kidnap and murder campaign in the West Bank, Britain's newest foreign minister, David Cameron, says he's worried Israel may have committed some breaches of international law. Responding to questions from the Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee, the former UK PM admitted to deep concern over Israel's methods, but said he was reassured by his government's legal advisors. Israel has exhibited a, quote, commitment, the capability, and the compliance to international law in Gaza. Though the issue of Israel's assassination of foreign nationals in neighboring countries wasn't broached, that too presumably fails to meet Britain's threshold for international criminality. Ken Stone is an activist and author working for peace with the Syria Support Movement International and Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. His book, Defiant Syria, Dispatches from the Second International Tour of Peace to Syria, is a compilation of his dispatches from his 2016 visit. Ken Stone in the first half. And while Israel's three-month-long martial rampage in Gaza has knocked many other stories of desperation from the news cycle, to be fair, Ethiopia's civil war and the dismal disappointment of the Pretoria Agreement for Tigrayans was long forgotten long before October 7th. Salamawit Gebremeskel is an Ethiopian emigre who has lived in Canada for nearly 30 years. Now a healthcare professional in Victoria, she has relatives in Tigray who were caught up in the war the Abe government waged against its civilians and are now suffering the peace accord Addis Ababa fails to honor. Salam and the GVTRRS community invite Victorians to join them February 3rd at the Odd Fellows Lodge downtown for a special evening titled Feast to Fight Famine. It's a dinner fundraiser focused on delivering much-needed support to Tigrayan families suffering from the post-war famine there. Salamawit Gebremeskel and Ethiopia's continuing struggle in the second half. But first, Ken Stone and Israel's deeply concerning behavior. Welcome back to the program, Ken.
My pleasure.
Now, Ken, can we begin with Foreign Minister Cameron's discomfiture with the possibility, the remote chance, Israel has transgressed the bounds of international jurisprudence and safely surmise David is delusional?
Well, it would be funny if it weren't so tragic. We have to remember, of course, David Cameron was the former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And during his tenure of office, which started in 2010, he joined the NATO war on Libya, which destroyed — that war was led, by the way, by a Canadian general. It destroyed Libya and turned it into a failed state in which there were slave markets in the public squares. The country which had the highest living standard in Africa was ruined and still is in ruins today and still being fought over by warlords. He also supported the Saudi-U.S. war in Yemen. He was an enabler of Israel, and he refused to criticize Israel for its 2014 incursion into Gaza, which killed thousands of people, including about 1,500 children. He also was part of the U.S. regime change operation, which was unsuccessful in overthrowing the government in Syria. And notably, his government was the first government in 200 years that failed to pass a government resolution to bomb Damascus in 2013 over the alleged gassing that took place, chemical attack that took place in Ghouta, which later turned out to be the work of the Syrian rebels backed by the U.S. and the U.K. So this man is a vassal of the U.S. empire. He has a track record of supporting genocide in Israel, Palestine, and he is a warmonger. So, as I said, if he can't see war crimes being committed in Gaza today, then I urge him to go online tomorrow and watch the presentation by South Africa, History in the Making, at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, which is the main judicial organ of the United Nations, at which time, for the first time in history, an application will be considered by the court to label a war, in this case, the onslaught, the slaughter that's taking place in Gaza by the Israeli Defense Forces, a genocide. So that's what I would recommend also to all your listeners. If they haven't seen it, it'll be, I'm sure, recorded, and it's going to be an historical event, and it will give credence to the United Nations organization. I hope if the court approves the application, Israel's going to contest it, of course, and it will serve to isolate Israel in the international community and, its sponsor, the United States of America, if the court does find that Israel is committing genocide. And all the evidence is there in the South African application to the court. It's about more than 80 pages showing genocidal intent, showing genocidal governmental policy, and it has tons and tons of examples, including videos I haven't seen the videos, of Israel's attacks on the civilians of Gaza, including women and children, people, journalists, people who were taking shelter in hospitals, schools, mosques, and UN RWA Relief Works Agency facilities. So in my books, it's a genocide, but the Israelis are not, in my books, in my estimation, winning this war. And what I think they're getting increasingly desperate, and that's why I'd like to talk to you about the fact that Israel and the USA are trying to save Israel's bacon by widening this war into a general Middle Eastern, or I should say West Asian war, which may set all the countries of West Asia on fire, from Yemen to Palestine to Syria to Iraq and even Iran. That's what I think is the big item on the agenda for this week.
Yeah, and well, of course, Iran has always been the target as long as I can remember, for the last 20 years at least, but probably more reasonably since the revolution in 79. Israel, you know, when Iran came out with its theocratic government and refused to recognize Israel in the most withering terms. But about that South African application to the International Court of Justice, everybody I've heard talk about it has lauded the this application. I was just watching Michael Link over at Electronic Intifada. He's an international lawyer, and he was saying of it, it's an extraordinary document and accessible to non-lawyers as well. 84 pages rather long, he says. And on the Gray Zone, I was watching a few days ago, Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté were talking, referencing this. And as you said, there's a section of it, 9 pages worth of documented and referenced individual instances of war crimes, not that they aren't in themselves containing many other crimes. If you bomb a hospital, for example, and kill 100 people, there's 101 crimes there. But they too said it was an amazing document, and South Africa has also provided with this document the space for other countries at the United Nations, which is what the body that in which the ICJ is seated, an opportunity to perhaps speak up, because the many nations, the vast majority in the world, oppose what's going on, oppose Israel and America, its main sponsor in what's been happening there, but for various reasons are afraid or cowed or to speak up, and or don't feel that they'll be heard anyway. So why risk their economies, tilting at windmills? But the South African application provides that first tear in the fabric that has protected and provided impunity to Israel all these many years, through not just this latest manifestation of horror, atrocity, and outrage.
Well, if people want to go to the Facebook page or to our Twitter account of the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, or my personal one, Ken Stone, they can sign on to petitions urging Canada to support the South African application. And I just got off a press conference that started about an hour ago, held by the Just Peace Advocates and the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute. It was a press conference with a number of notable speakers calling on Canada to do just that, endorse the South African application, which has been endorsed by several countries, I think, Malaysia, I think Bolivia, and several other countries, and Canada should join in as well. And I think that that this application will, as you say, tear the fabric that has protected and enabled Israel to commit the worst possible atrocities against the Palestinian people for the past 75 years.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Ken Stone. Ken is an activist and author working for peace with the Syria Support Movement International and the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, as you mentioned. His book, Defiant Syria, Dispatches from the Second International Tour of Peace to Syria, is a compilation of his dispatches from that 2016 visit. Well, to address now the issue that you feel most direly in need of addressing beyond Gaza, is this spreading of conflict throughout the region. We've seen it in the Red Sea with Yemen amazingly challenging the world on its own, challenging Israeli shipping and those allied with Israel to stop the weapons going in, weapons that Canada too is supporting supplying Israel with from another location. But in your position with the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network, Ken, you've been working on a draft you mentioned while we were off air. Do you want to address that?
Yes, I'd be glad to do so. Thanks. The widening of the war is one of the concerns of the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network, of which I'm a member of the coordinating committee. I did write up a draft statement for the network, which it has yet to consider, but it seems to be finding favor among the people at the top. And the point of the draft statement is there are two points. It's twofold. The first one is, today and all week we've seen Anthony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, conducting his so-called shuttle diplomacy in West Asia, visiting all the Arab capitals. And it's clearly an attempt by the U.S., as usual, to control and direct the narrative on whatever issue is of importance to it, in this case, the situation in Gaza and Israel. From the point of view of the peace movement, it should not be a unilateral U.S. diplomacy. In 2002, the United Nations created the Quartet, which included the United States, the European Union, the UN Secretariat, and Russia, and designated all of these four parties, the Quartet, to seek, based on many UN resolutions, to seek a just, lasting, and comprehensive peace deal for the entire Middle East that would result in Palestinian state with its capital in Jerusalem, an end to the occupation, a return of the Palestinian refugees, protections for the mosque, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and more, and end the situation, the cycle of violence, the endless conflict that's been going on in Israel-Palestine for the past 75 years. So it should not be Anthony Blinken trying to make a deal and trying to set up something for the day after the war. It should be the quartet that's doing that and trying to find a comprehensive peace agreement. That's the one aspect of the draft statement. The other aspect is that while Anthony Blinken is shuttling around the Middle East, there have been a number of provocations by Israel and by the USA against the countries that are part of the axis of resistance against the U.S. Empire and Israeli Zionism and its colonial project in West Asia. And these have been designed, in my view, by the U.S. and Israel to provoke a response by Hezbollah, by Iran, by Syria, by Iraq, and by Yemen into doing something that could be sold to the Western public as a pretext for a much bigger war. I'll give you some examples. Al-Aruri, who was a leader of Hamas, was assassinated by Israel in Beirut last week. And he was a negotiator, an official negotiator, with the U.S. and Israel over the hostage issue. So Israel killed the messenger, essentially. Another incident that took place about 10 days ago was that Israel assassinated, extrajudicial assassination of General Mousavi of Iran in a strike near the capital of Syria in Damascus. So they killed one of the leading generals in Iran. Following that, the U.S. Attacked three Yemeni naval vessels in the Red Sea, killing 11 Yemeni soldiers. Then there was a bombing in Kerman, right inside Iran, on the anniversary of the assassination by then-President Donald Trump of the U.S. of General Soleimani, who was killed on a peace mission in Baghdad on January 4th, I think it was, 2020. And people had gathered for memorial service, and the memorial service was bombed, causing 400 people to be killed and injured. Another provocation to Iran. On top of that, Hezbollah's senior commander was killed just two or three days ago. His name was Wissam Tawil, in Lebanon. An Iraqi commander was killed 6 days ago by a U.S. drone outside of just outside of Baghdad. And he was a member of the Iraqi military forces. So they the U.S. occupation forces killed an Iraqi commander inside of Iraq. And that is, you know, that provoked the Iraqi government, which hadn't done much in the past 4 years about getting the U.S. out of Iraq, to start the ball rolling to end the U.S. presence, military presence in Iraq. Jordan also bombed Syria the other day, and the U.S. and Israel have launched a number of attacks on Syria and Iraq in response to attacks on U.S. military bases, illegal military bases in Syria, and against U.S. facilities in Iraq. So the U.S. and Israel, to my mind, are looking to widen this war because Israel is getting more desperate and is not winning the battle, in Gaza the way it thought it would. So, this is becoming a very serious situation, and the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network wants to address it and call on the Canadian government for its part to do a number of things. There's the first one is to support the application of South Africa to the International Court of Justice. So what we would like Canada to do among these 12 points, I won't go through them all unless you want me to, is to withdraw from the U.S.-led naval operation Prosperity Guardian in the Red Sea. Here we are again like a dirty shirt, like a vassal, trying to holding on to the bully's coattails and sending ships to the Red Sea.
Is that right, though, Ken? Because the last I heard, Canada's contribution to Operation Prosperity Guardian, and we could talk about whose prosperity if we had more time, consisted only of officers, a handful of naval officers being seconded to, I'm not even sure whose ships, but not Canadian ships. That was the last I heard. Is there more developments on that?
You may have more recent information than I do, but whether or not it's ships or it's personnel, it's participation in another imperial operation in the Red Sea. The level of violence has increased exponentially since the conflict started on October the 7th on the Lebanese border after the assassination of Hamas leader Al-Aruri, Hezbollah to take revenge, and they took some serious revenge by dropping a ballistic missile into Haifa and destroying the Israeli fort called Meron, which is used for surveillance and control of Israeli attacks on Lebanon. In turn, Israel counterattacked and bombed sites in behind the lines in Lebanon. So the war in Lebanon is getting much bigger all the time and hotter. You know, it's increasing every day. And it doesn't take much in a situation like this for a spark to light up the whole region. And that's what we're concerned about, because in the view of the peace movement in Canada, countries of the world should not be at war with each other right now. There are solutions. There are negotiated solutions and diplomacy that could be brought to bear to end the big wars in Ukraine and in the Middle East, because all it would take to end the war in the Middle East, at least to stop the fighting, would be for Israel to declare a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. That would stop what's going on in the Red Sea, and that would probably stop what's going on the Lebanese border. Now, we think that the countries of the world are facing an existential crisis with the environment. And rather than spending all this time and energy and animosity in fighting among the major powers of the world, it would take major cooperation between the great powers of the world to mitigate the environmental crisis and deal with it in a significant way before it's too late for humanity. That's what we think should be done.
Well, of course, and the militaries are massive, especially the American one, but all militaries are massive contributors to pollution and greenhouse gas emanations and all the rest of it, bigger than any. The United States, I think, is bigger than 3/4 of the world's countries in its CO2 production. Well, Ken, and of course, Al-Aqsa Hospital attacked just today, shelled. Can you imagine where bombing hospitals becomes just a ho-hum topic, just another news item or not news item, and it's the last operating hospital fully functioning, or not fully functioning, but functioning hospital in the central and northern Gaza region, and now it's under attack, and they're trying to bring that down too in this great exodus, this second Nakba, this genocide being conducted. More fodder for the International Court of Justice, no doubt.
I wanted to add one thing. When you mentioned the arms manufacturers, you asked me to talk about the protests that have taken place in Canada against Canadian arms manufacturers who sell and import arms from the state of Israel. There's a two-way trade with the state of Israel. And there have been a whole slew of demonstrations that have taken place by World Beyond War and Labor Against the Arms Trade in the last month or so, including Pratt & Whitney in Mississauga, L3 Harris in Hamilton, Toronto, and Montreal, Lockheed Martin in Ottawa, Senstar Corporation in Waterloo, General Dynamics in Quebec, Geospectrum in Halifax, Boeing in Winnipeg, and something called Incus in Toronto. So I think, if I can add a few words, I think that those groups in the peace movement that I just mentioned have done a good job exposing to Canadians that there is a two-way arms trade between Canada and Israel, and that trade should be shut off. That Israel is a rogue state that shows no interest in international law, commits extrajudicial assassinations, occupies other countries, including Syria's Golan Heights and the Shabaab farms of Lebanon. So these actions that have taken place in Canada show that Canada is not a neutral participant in the struggle in West Asia, and in particular in Palestine. And I hope that it helps Canadians realize that we have a lot of things that Canada could do. Canada has a lot of levers it could pull if it wanted to bring Israel to the negotiating table. And it's about time that Jagmeet Singh and Justin Trudeau started pulling some of those levers, including withdrawing Canada's ambassador from Tel Aviv, in Tel Aviv, and to show Canada's displeasure. Well, I hope that and all the other points that are in the draft statement will be published soon, and Canadians can have a better picture of all the levers Canada could pull in order to bring peace to the Middle East.
Well, and that'll be upcoming, forthcoming, we presume, at the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network. Do a search for that. Nur Dogan has an article at readthemaple.com on those boycotts you mentioned. Workers picket military contractor, tell Trudeau government to halt Israel exports. That's from a few weeks ago, detailing some of those manifestations. And yeah, just meeting up at the Parliament building lawns isn't enough, really. There has to be some more concerted action, I imagine. And as you mentioned, World Beyond War and Labor for Palestine and Labor Against the Arms Trade do searches for all of those. Ken, thanks a lot for coming on again. And I want everyone else to stay tuned, because Salam Gebremeskel is going to be up next. And we're going to talk about her native Ethiopia and the suffering her family and others are enduring there in the post-peace process famine that's going on right now, as well as the floods. It seems they're getting one after the other. But thanks a lot, Ken, for coming on again, eh?
Anytime, Chris.
All right, till the next time.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Together across the planet that gave us birth to act as one, bring peace and justice all around this shattered earth. If a song could take down borders, take down fences, make them fall, liberate imprisoned, kept behind the ghetto walls. If any song could stop the bombs, so the next might be the last. If any song could change the future, so it won't be like the past. If any song a missile fired from the Iron Dome, if it could protect the children. children.